welcome to the next edition of the VTX podcast. Here at the Veterinary Thought Exchange, we like to start by asking, what are you thinking? And this week, we're going to be thinking about leptospirosis. So for those of you that are kind of familiar with the podcast, we're taking a slightly different format for 2025, and we are going to be splitting up in an amicable way our clinical and non-clinical parts of the podcast. So we had an amazing interview this month with Jasmine Paris, a chat about her career and amazing achievements. So in this episode, we're going to be focusing very much on our clinical provision, just in a way to really give you the ability to digest your clinical CPD in a little bit more of a user-friendly way. So hopefully you find that helpful. We'd really, really appreciate any feedback. And these segments are going to be focusing on answering a clinical question. So we like to consider, we always like to say, what are you thinking? And I would consider this to be just a thought on something, just a thought. So today we're going to be focusing our thought and thinking on leptospirosis. And this is a question from one of our members, one of our VTX members. And the question was, and the question that we're going to answer today is, what is the best way of diagnosing leptospirosis in dogs? So the question really comes from the fact that there are, for many of the infectious diseases that we diagnose in cats and dogs, there's more than one option of what to do, you know, how to test. And I think leptospirosis is a really, really good example of that. So just really quickly, you know, what is leptospirosis? So leptospirosis is a bacterial infection. There's spirochete bacteria. And they're one of the infectious diseases that we vaccinate dogs against. And that's often where our owners or caregivers, they know about leptospirosis because it's one of those vaccinations that they're kind of faced with. But ultimately, it's a infectious disease that particularly dogs, I mean, cats are kind of a whole other story, and we don't, you know, they're certainly not as clinically affected as leptospirosis as dogs are. But certainly it's an infectious disease that dogs can pick up from the environment, often from contaminated water sources, that will result in a number of different clinical signs, but most notably liver and kidney involvement. So many of the cases that we're seeing with leptospirosis will come to us because they have clinical signs associated with liver and kidney disease. Not always. You know, we can see respiratory signs with leptospirosis. We can see ocular signs. We can see signs affecting coagulation that can have an effect on platelets and things. So but I think that kind of textbook presentation is often that combination of liver and kidney involvement. So I think the question then is, if you are suspicious of leptospirosis from the clinical presentation, what is the best way of testing? And I think it goes without saying that a lot of these things are, the index of suspicion is increased through the kind of standard biochemistry and hematology that we do. So, you know, from your biochemistry, you may see increases in liver and renal parameters. So urea, creatinine, and the liver enzymes may be increased. You may see increases in bilirubin. As I mentioned, with hematology, you may see a decrease in platelets. You may see some changes in white and red blood cells. You know, you may see increases in white blood cells and maybe a little bit of a non-regenerative anemia. So, but really from a routine hematology and biochemistry point of view, you're looking at those liver and kidney changes. Urinalysis might be interesting. Standard urinalysis, you may see a reduction in urine-specific gravity, and you may see signs of tubular disease like glucosuria. So those also may raise red flags. But when it comes down to choosing the tests that are going to be most helpful in making that more definitive diagnosis, really you've got two main options. You've got the option to do PCR testing, where you're actually looking for the DNA of the organism, or you can do serology testing, where you're looking for that response that the body's had to the organism being there, that serological response. And so those are really the two main options that you have. The PCR testing is really good, particularly when you're dealing with more acute disease. And typically with the PCR testing, you would test blood and urine. And the reason you would test blood and urine is because actually when the animal initially becomes infected with leptospirosis, that organism will be in the bloodstream, but very quickly or over a period of time, and that we don't quite know what that time period is, that organism will leave the bloodstream and actually end up in the organs it's going to affect, ultimately in the kidney, and then will end up in the urine. So when you're initially infected, you're going to be PCR positive in the blood, and at some stage that'll switch and you'll no longer be PCR positive in the blood and you'll be more likely to be PCR positive in the urine. And so doing that combination of PCR blood and urine is going to increase your chance of making that diagnosis, because you don't know when that switch is going to happen. When is it going to be, you know, turn from being positive to negative PCR in the blood? We don't 100% know that, right? So that's why the combination is really, really important. The other concern is, you know, PCR is a great test, but it's not perfect. If the patient has already had some sort of antibiotics, will that potentially affect the PCR positivity of the organisms being killed off already? So it's not perfect, but that's a really good way of particularly, you know, addressing the presence of the organism maybe in more acute disease. Generally speaking, it would still be considered that probably the gold standard for diagnosing leptospirosis is serology, a serological test, the MET titers, as they're kind of called. And actually, we would consider really the gold standard to be paired MET titers, serological titers. And the reason for that is that, again, that's not a perfect test. The serology testing typically will look for multiple different leptospira serovars. So it won't just look for one of the leptospirosis organisms, it'll look for multiple. And what we're doing with that is demonstrating a rise in the titer by doing the paired titer. So by taking a blood sample and then 7 to 10 days, probably no more than 14 days later, taking a paired sample. And the reason that that's important is because you're wanting to demonstrate a rising titer. And that's important because we can see positivity with the serology because of vaccination. Actually, the serology can go up quite dramatically sometimes with vaccination. And so the rising titer really does demonstrate that there has been an active and relevant infection. The problem with the serology, again, not a perfect test, is that initially with serology, you might get false negatives if there hasn't been that opportunity to mount an antibody response in the body. And so again, the rising titer helps with that. But equally, who's got time to wait around for a couple of weeks to get this rising titer back? And so it does have limitations as far as it's not really an immediate answer for you. And so again, it's a helpful test, but it's not perfect because it doesn't allow maybe more of that kind of immediate positivity that you need in a test to make decisions regarding treatment. So circling back to our initial question, what is the best test for leptospirosis? I mean, the answer is that there isn't one, but actually in an ideal world, if you really want to demonstrate the presence of leptospirosis, I would use PCR in the acute patient, but I would also use that in combination with serology. And, you know, it's the kind of infection that you then also have to be guided by clinical suspicion. And if you are highly clinically suspicious of leptospirosis, I would do the PCR, but I would also start treatment because there is a, you know, zoonotic risk. Often these patients can be very clinically unwell. And so I think the answer really comes from multiple parts. The answer comes from routine blood work and urinalysis. The answer comes potentially from PCR, but remembering that even if there's a negative with the PCR, it could be a false negative, and therefore the combination often of the serology, the PCR, and the routine blood work is what we're using to make real clinical decisions. So never a perfect test, sadly, but those would be the realistic options that we have for leptospirosis. The only thing I would just mention is that there are some in-house SNAP tests that have been produced and used by some people. I would be very careful with those, interpreting those. That may give you a positive, that may be suggestive of leptospirosis. A negative of on an in-house SNAP test definitely does not rule out leptospirosis. So again, the PCR testing, which is a send-out test, and the paired MAT serology is really the ones that I would rely on for making that diagnosis. Okay, so I hope that's helpful today. Like I said, we want to try and answer a question and keep it kind of shorter and digestible and easy to use from a CPD point of view. Do let us know what you think of our new format. Do let us know what you would like to hear us chat about on the clinical podcast. Happy for me to sit and answer the questions, but also we'd love to get some guests on to do that too. So any topic is a fair game, and I will organize someone to help. So we'd love to hear your feedback about that. Please do check out what VTX do and our wider CPD provision at www.vtx-cpd.com. I look forward to seeing you back for not only our clinical segments, but for our non-clinical chats too. And we're very excited about those across 2025. Gosh, 2025, Karen. So I hope, Karen, that wasn't too painful to have to listen to leptospirosis, which is something you thought you never have to know about. Karen is, so just again, for Karen is our podcast producer, my best friend, but is not a veterinary professional. And so all of this probably just sounds like gobbledygook.
It was good to hear, good to hear that Billy Rubin has made an appearance again. He sounds like a nice man.
Billy Rubin. Billy Rubin, actually, he sounds like a good Scottish guy.
He does, yeah.
Doesn't he? Okay, well, listen, thanks so much, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next time.